On today's episode of the Woof Life Show, we chat with Tamar Geller. This name might sound familiar. She is a New York Times bestselling author, and she is Oprah's dog trainer. I am in awe of Tamar. She has a business known as The Love Dog. She is a celebrity dog trainer, New York Times bestselling author of two books, and just a woman who is absolutely incredible. She was so gracious with her time and chatting with me, and I wanted to, within this intro, without spoiling too much, she has an incredibly unique take on dog training. Her entire take is that obedience and telling dogs no is counterproductive to actually how your dog wants to interact with you, because most dogs just want to please and know that they're excelling and have that task. I've actually completed a social experiment for the past couple of weeks. I think it's been almost close to a month since I met with Tamar, and I have followed the guidelines of the Love Dog, and I have been taking this approach with Pixie. When I adopted Pixie, I was told that she had been trained as almost like a police dog. Ex-trainer had trained her with the previous owner. And upon that, and she had all of these commands. So Pixie had a command that was off trail, and she would go number one on command and pretty much number two on command and heel, et cetera, et cetera. But it was very much from the obedience mentality. Pixie being my first dog and coming fully trained was kind of perfect for me, but I didn't embrace my own training with her, which hindsight being 2020, I probably would have redone. As Pixie has gotten older, I find her to be slightly more reactive with dogs. And so as a bigger dog in the area that we live in, I end up crossing the street quite frequently. I've completed this experiment where I am applying Tamar's methods, and I'm actually, when Pixie sees a dog, doesn't react, she's much more excited, and using those methods, I'll talk more about this after the interview, but Tamar's method really truly does work, and I highly recommend that people consider and really embrace this form of training, because I think that that positive reinforcement instead of saying obey me is so absolutely essential. And I saw Pixie's delight, and it was, even though she's great and very obedient and loves me, I saw her have additional respect and surprise and delight in embodying this training method. So I cannot thank Tamar enough. My walks with Pixie, I find much more, I would say less stressful, because I don't have to worry as much about her reacting to a dog. To give finite data points, we take 3 walks a day. In the past month, she has only reacted to 2 dogs with me, and that's a vast improvement versus where we started. So this is going to be something that I'll continue to update, but I'm so excited to have Tamar on the Woof Life Show. It's just such an honor. You have quite a pedigree, pun intended.
Hopefully I'm a rescue with pedigree.
You are. You're the $1 million one. And you have a New York Times bestseller author. You've the resident dog expert on the Today Show. You've been in pretty much, I feel like, every single TV show I could imagine as I was doing research for this. I learned so much about you. I think my favorite interview was the Larry King one.
Wow.
With Biscuit and seeing Larry with his dog. And so I'm so excited to have you here. And I'm just honored.
It's my pleasure to be here. You're a true dog lover, and it's my pleasure.
I'm a nerd at this point, I would say. So it's a good thing to be nerdy about dogs.
Well, what else is there? You know, the nerdier they are, the more loving we are, and that's
true.
The whole point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Who wants to be cool and to hold back their, you know, affection?
I agree.
Right?
I think that some people may tend away from that, but I think that dogs allow you to wear your heart on your sleeve and connect with something that's a different, very whole part of yourself, I would say.
I think that I completely agree with you, and I think to take it to the next level, that dogs are a gift from God, because in this fast-paced world where everybody's walking around with masks and pretense and I'm this and I'm that, dogs don't care.
Yeah.
And therefore, dogs invite us to reconnect to who we really are, actually. The beautiful, pure, innocent, playful, nerdy part of ourselves.
I think it's the truest part of yourself is what a dog sees. Yes. There's no BS to it. It's just... And I also think that to take it another step further with rescue, and when you open your heart and your home to a rescue, there's even something, another level, I would say, of a spiritual connection that you do have with that dog.
So you see, all my three dogs are rescues.
Atta girl.
I'm completely about rescue. One of them is a gorgeous purebred golden retriever, because, as you know, every breed has a...
Yeah.
You can rescue basically any dog that you like. However, I do not see that rescue dogs are actually more special than dogs who come from breeders. And the reason why is because I see a lot of dogs who come from breeders and they're messed up.
Yeah.
Maybe even more than a rescue dog, and I'll tell you why. One of the reasons is I see when a certain breed or mixed breeds, because Labradoodle, Golden Doodle, all of these, they're mixed breeds that we used to rescue, and you still can rescue a lot of them. But when they become popular, they become a commodity, and everybody's running to get them. And what they see is a lot of breeders breeding them for what the customer wants, which is cuteness. And then they come to me with a very cute dog who has severe emotional issues, particularly where it comes to fear. And it was very interesting, because some breeders said to me, our dogs are shy, they're going to grow out of it. But when I work with so many of the dogs, and I see the shyness ultimately would lead to... shyness is another way, another word for fear, right?
Yes.
It's like the decorated word for fear. It's, you know.
Yeah.
But it's fear. And in my experience working with over 30 years with dogs is that the number one lead for aggressive behavior is fear.
Yeah.
So when those beautiful, expensive Labradoodle, Golden Doodles come to me and the breeder lets me know, just that you know, they're shy, and I work with 10, 15 of dogs of those breeders, I'm like, okay, you're breeding genetically dogs that will have a tough life, not any different than a rescue dogs who've been through trauma. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Because whether it's epigenetic
or
whether it's learned, at the end of the day, the bottom line is I'm dealing with dogs who do not trust.
Yeah, that's very true.
Do you understand? So therefore, for me, as a behaviorist, I do not discriminate against breeder's dog. I'm looking at every dog and every dog parent.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, what can I do to serve you, doggy and dog parent, to have the most awesome life?
Yeah.
That is the point of getting a dog. That's my point of what I bring in.
Yeah. And Oprah has coined the term that you are the life coach of dogs and their humans, right?
That is so funny that you know that. So she, you know, I remember we were sitting we were sitting on the front in the front in her house on the front stairs, and I was blessed to spend a lot of time with this unbelievable, magnificent angel in a human body. And we were sitting there, and she was just doing some of her sweet behavior with her dogs. They were, at the time, the Golden Retrievers. After that, she, with them, she, by the way, experienced what puppy mills were like, and she only rescues since then.
Got it.
But I was sitting with her, and she was just so sweet, and it hit me. It just kind of like I got a download, and I said to her, you know, your dogs don't know you're Oprah. And it's kind of like, if you think about it, they don't care if you gain weight, you lost weight, if you make money, you have no money, if your network is whatever, who cares? They don't care. They really, truly. And she looked at me, and we started the conversation, and she goes, you know, that's why I love them, because we went from there, and we got from there, and we had really pretty deep and amazing conversation. She's truly like one of the best teachers all of us, I think, and I was blessed that I could ask her some very specific questions over the years of knowing her. And that's when she said to me, you're really a life coach. But back then, Lauren, nobody knew the term life coach.
Yeah.
And I didn't know the term, and I would not think myself as a life coach for people, even now. Even if I will give advice because I see things that you can do that can make your life better. I think it's a big job to be a life coach, and it just baffles me when people take a course and they become life coach, because I think the best way to become a life coach is through failure.
Yeah.
And through your own resilience and everything, whether you're a person or a dog. So, but she was very sweet to say to me, and I take it very seriously that I'm there to serve.
I think that what I loved about it is because I think there's maybe some 22-year-old millennials who have ruined the term life coach. But I think that life coach at its core, and just when I heard that, it changes the way that you would see the dog.
100%.
If you're thinking that you're a life coach to dogs, how I perceive that, because I was like, I had a little bit of an aha moment with that, because I was just like, if you go into it with that perspective, then every time that you feel frustrated, or it's just kind of creates a path of how you understand, how you partner, work with your dog, all of those kind of things. So
I'm clapping for you because you nailed it.
Yeah.
Because you nailed it. Because this is what my work, my life's work is. I do not believe in obedience. I'm against obedience.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm against obedience is because we have scientific research that prove the dog's mental capacity and emotional capacity is very much like a human toddler.
Yep.
Now, in the 1950s, we used to tell children, obey. You don't have the right to think. You have no right for opinion. Just obey. But we moved from there.
Yep.
Now it's all about conscious parenting and helping the kid become the best version of themselves, right?
Yeah.
So what about dogs? How come with the dogs we're still stuck in the 1950s in the way of dog training when science tells us that they have the same cognitive abilities of a human toddler? And therefore, my method is anti-obedience, and it's for teaching dogs life skills. I cannot tell you how many calls I get a day where people say, we've been through the training in this pet store. We've been through with that dog trainer. We've been that. So my dogs know how to sit, how to stay, how to everything. But my dog is still reactive. My dog is still go crazy when A, guests come into the door, B, when I'm taking them on a walk, you know, whatever. And I have to tell them, you taught your dog how to obey. You have not taught your dog life skills. One of the biggest life skills I believe we need to teach dogs is how to manage the emotional state and the impulses when they're triggered. By the way, us as people, that is what we're being taught. And
completely.
I wish I could, I wish I was taught better than that, because I'm still more reactive than I would like to be, particularly when I'm seeing animal abuse or whatever.
Yeah.
Or injustice of any sort.
Completely.
You know, but I believe that the number one life skill dogs needs to be taught is how to manage the emotional state, how to know how to do it, how to literally create a neural pathway in the brain that move them from the reactionary type of the brain, the reptilian part of the brain, to the limbic system, which is more where the amygdala measures, is it going to be threat or is it safe?
Yeah.
To literally teach them how to do it, and ultimately to the frontal cortex,
yeah,
the lobes, where it's about, and it's the second life skill that I teach, how to have secure attachment to the dog, to the parents, to the parent, meaning how not to be obedient to the parents,
yeah,
but instead of how to be devoted.
Yeah.
If you have your husband who is obedient to you,
yeah,
versus a husband who is devoted to you,
those
right?
Are very different things.
Completely different things. And dogs, they want to be devoted, and we take the most magnificent being on earth, in my mind,
yeah,
and we put them down and say, whatever your magnificence, we are not interested. We just need you to be obedient. To me, this is a slap in the face of God, slap in the face of Mother Nature.
Yeah.
What is the point? You know, people are not missing obedience in their life. They're not looking, you know, for those beings who are going to be obedient. They're looking for love. They're looking for connection.
Completely.
They're looking for that incredible feeling of somebody who's truly devoted to you.
Yeah.
So let's forget about obedience. Let's teach the dog's brain, literally the brain, how to make connections where they're going to learn how to think instead of just being reactive, and be devoted to you. So this is what I'm doing, and that's why I believe the love dog method is light years ahead of everything, because when back then, you know, I was doing positive dog training.
Yeah.
But which was great. It was revolutionary. You know, I started at the time the first cage-free kennel. I had to fight the city for 14 months, you know, to get the permits, because they said, you can't do it with dogs. You cannot put all dogs together. They're going to fight. I said, well, I'm actually a behaviorist. I know how to do it. And they said, well, you can't put dogs who are different sizes together. I said, I'm 5'1", I'm 90 pounds. Doesn't mean I'm not allowed to speak to somebody who's 6'7" and 300 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a big Jack Russell personality in me, and that can be, you know, a goofy Dane.
Yeah.
So let's look at the personality, not its size. And what I'm trying to do with society is to really, I think what you want to do is to wake up people, because people know what I'm talking about. They know that this is the way.
Yeah.
You are, Lauren, you reached out to me because it resonated with you.
Completely.
Is the way.
Yeah.
When we're being life coach for dogs, like you said.
Just as you were talking, I was thinking to myself, I understand why you would not see a breeder dog completely different than a rescue, because in your mentality, whatever the background on the dog, you'd be able to retrain the brain on how to process and deal with that. And dogs are already so known for being resilient naturally. So it totally makes sense that you'd be able to do that, and it would be an incredible method. I keep thinking about how I need to work with my Pixie, because sometimes she'll react with other dogs. She's very interesting. Sometimes she completely does, sometimes she doesn't. So I'm going to try some of the methods to,
So here's kind of like the way I want you to think about it. People come and tell me, my dog is reactive to other dogs, but sometimes, like you said, yes and no. And I'm saying, so when do you practice with him on that? And they say, when there's a dog. All right. So let's park that thought. Let's say you do not know how to drive.
Yeah.
You don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So the first lesson, I will take you to the 405 freeway at 5 p.m. Would you be able to learn how to drive?
No.
Why not?
Because you would have no basis for how to approach with that, and it would be so overwhelming.
Overwhelming, because you're going to feel, I am going to die.
Yeah.
Your cortisol, the stress hormone in your body, going to shoot, because it's kind of like cars are coming from all directions. I'm feeling unsafe. I'm going to die. And you're going to have a meltdown.
Yeah.
So that's what happened with dogs on walks.
Got it.
Nobody taught them what are they supposed to do.
Yeah.
Some people say it's okay, it's okay, which doesn't give you instructions. Some people correct, use prong collars. Some people go to the dark side, which they say the dog is dominant, which is absolutely got nothing to do with dominance.
Yeah.
So do you see, if I'm bringing it in human terms, you realize how unreasonable we are when we're trying to fix a situation at the most. It's kind of like if I will take Navy SEAL Team 6 and without training, send them out to kill Osama bin Laden. They have had so much training. not only in general,
yeah,
but specific. As an ex-intelligence officer with the Elite Special Forces, I can tell you,
yeah,
we build models, like one-to-one models, realistic models of what the house, what's the resident is like, what's the neighborhood is like. So there's absolutely zero chance for, there's no zero, but you try to minimize the chance of surprises, like obviously what happened with Osama bin Laden as one of the helicopter blades got stuck on the fence.
Yeah.
Do you understand? So you're trying to minimize. We, with our dogs, take them to that type of, well, for them, it feels life or death. Without any training, we think obedience. Obedience does not taught the brain what to do. Obedience is when everything is cool.
Yeah.
When the poop hit the fan, all right?
Yeah.
You cannot connect with your brain. It's just physically impossible.
Yeah,
you're absolutely on a reactionary mode.
Completely. And as you're talking, I kept thinking to myself, because Pixie was an owner surrender to us, mm-hmm. she came trained. And I didn't do
it. Trained with, you know, what do you say? How do you call it?
Yeah, she was, she knew quite a few commands.
In quotes.
Yeah.
Okay, so quotes. She knows how to obey to some commands. Okay.
But what I noticed with her is because I wasn't as rigid, I did instill probably a part of it with the love perspective. And I think I always just equated, okay, she's just reactive because she wasn't socialized. And I would never be able to get past it. But we're going to test this. I'm going to test with Pixie, a 13-year-old dog, if an old dog can learn new tricks. I'm going to try your method.
So I worked the other day with an 8-year-old bulldog. And, you know, bulldogs are very, very, they absolutely have the tendency for OCD with skateboards, with whatever.
Yeah.
So that dog was barking at rocks. If they wanted to move him around the house, they would take a brick, literally, and he would follow it as if you see like a tour guide holding an umbrella or whatever. I was watching it. It was truly unbelievable. And the dog was 8 years old, and I actually went just to friends to have lunch. It was not a client. But I'm seeing what's going on, and I'm like, wait a minute, what, you know? And they're like, yeah, he would not stop barking. And I said, can I try little games with him? And I started little games, and they wrote to me the most beautiful, beautiful take, you know, the parents, because they were like in tears to see what they never tried, which is to teach the dogs how to think when he was triggered, how to ignore the trigger. You know what? I did not start with that break.
Yeah.
I started with other things because we have, like, with driving lessons, we have to start at the parking lot, quiet street, busier street, etc.
Completely.
Or swimming or anything else, any sports that we play.
Yeah.
We have to start little bit by little. Anyhow, it became so evident that the dog is no OCD, that the dog is not dumb, that the dog is not, you know, all those dominance and all the nonsense that I hear, and that it was simply brilliant dog who was not getting enough mental stimulation.
Got it.
So when that was set and done and we set again, the owner said, well, so we're going to increase the walk. We're going to take him for one more walk a day. And I go, you're taking him on the same walks every day.
Yeah.
So let's go and look. And what I did is I wrote the list of the 6 core needs for a dog.
Yep.
And the needs are to just, I took them from my dear friend Tony Robbins, but it's applicable to dogs and to people. The 6 needs are, 5 of them are exactly the same as people.
Yeah.
The 6th is different. So one of the need that we all have is the need for certainty, need for predictability.
Yeah.
If you and I sitting here and there was now a huge earthquake and this beautiful building was falling apart.
Yeah.
Believe me, everything will be put on hold. All right? Nothing happens until we can have certainty, you know, safety.
Of course.
The next need, though, is the opposite, is uncertainty. And the reason why is because you're doing that podcast. What if you get your favorite guest? But it's the same guest that in, day out.
Yeah.
Your viewers probably would tune off, would tune away. Because we need variety. We cannot have even something that we like, whether it's food, whether it's your podcast guest, nothing. We need to have variety.
We do.
Right? The next need is the need for love and belonging.
Yes.
Where we feel we fit in, we belong. If I showed up to your podcast right now dressed in a bathing suit, I probably would not be looking, you know, like I fit in right now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
so
I completely.
We want to fit, we want to belong, but within fitting and belonging, we want to be significant. That's the next need. We want to stand out. You belong to a whole group of people who are doing podcasts, but within that, you want to stand out. You want to give an extra special content. The fifth need is the need for doing better, for growth.
Yeah.
Your relationship with your husband. If it stays the same, I can guarantee it's going to end up in divorce.
Yeah.
That's how it works. With your dogs, the same. Everything, your podcast, if you only keep it at this level, not going to last.
Yeah.
Everything in life, whether it's when you look at nature, Mother Nature, she's my biggest teacher.
Yeah.
Everything in nature, it is either growing or dying.
It's evolving. Yeah.
Evolving, getting better.
Yeah.
The last need, the sixth need for people is the need for contribution.
Okay.
That's why you're doing your podcast. All right? We want to do better. We want to contribute, maybe to our family, to our children, to our tribe, whatever it is.
Yeah.
For dogs, it's not about contribution. For dogs, it's actually the sixth need is a need for physical exercise.
Yeah.
The must. For us, it's good for us.
Yeah.
We should do it. For a dog, it's must.
It's essential.
So when we look at those six needs,
certainty
and uncertainty, love and belonging and significance, and the last two, growth and physical exercise, I have to look of those six needs. Each dog has those needs.
Yeah.
Which two are the leading needs? So we looked at that dog, and the owner said, oh, my God. I said, what need is not being met? And the owner looked and he said, uncertainty. And I said, that's right. The dog has too much certainty. He's eating the same food at the same time. He's going on a walk with the same dog walker at the same time.
Got it.
Everything. The only thing is uncertain is what your reaction going to be to his barking at a rock.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Right? The second need that the dog wasn't getting.
Exercise, I would think, right?
Or he was getting enough exercise.
Got it.
He wasn't getting growth.
Oh.
He was not getting stimulated to his brilliant, brilliant brain.
Got it.
Because everybody just saw him just as a dumb, you know, English bulldog. Like, doom, 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 walking around. But when I look at the dog, I'm looking and I'm saying, okay, what is your gift?
Yeah.
What is your gift? The way I look at every person, what is your gift? And how can I serve you to bring your gift to the world and help you be the best version of yourself? So we came up with a plan.
Wow.
Well, it was not about, you see, you automatically went just like somebody else in the house, exercise. No. Exercise is needed. But let's look from a deeper layer at the complexity and the magnificence of a dog's brain and dog's needs. See, when I look at that, I know how to solve the dog's behavioral issues.
Yeah.
Because I sit with curiosity, and I play different games where I test the dog the way you do with children.
Yeah.
And I ask them, what is the issue? And when we start the conversation and when I start making the connection, connecting the dots for the dog parents, all of a sudden they go, the son goes, oh, my God. So that's why when we sit on the couch, he goes and he tries to knock off the pictures. And I go, yes.
Wow.
Because he is trying to engage with you.
Yeah.
In a way where you're going to play with him. And he doesn't know how to tell you, hey, I need to solve puzzles. I need Sudoku.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Completely.
He doesn't know how to do it. So he's doing it in his limited dog way. But now that I show you a different way, you understand? It's like if you know how to drive a car.
Yeah.
I can teach you how to drive on a side street, on a freeway. I can take you to where the Ferrari racing.
Yeah, you could go to the Autobahn.
I can take you, there you go. So I can take you to Piccadilly Square where you're going to drive on the wrong side during rush hour. I can take that one skill of car driving and I can work with you when I can teach you how to bundle with me. So I don't need to teach dog many different skills. My method, the beauty is that I can teach a couple of skills, just like think about driving a car. It's brakes, it's gas and brakes, and steering the wheel. That's it.
Yeah.
So why is it so complicated? Because it's the others, the cars, the people. Yeah, it's the others.
The
so
weather, it's the adapting.
It.
Yeah, okay. I'm thinking through this, all
you
of this.
You got it. That's why you see you're rethinking dog training. That's why I don't do dog training the way it is. It's kind of like it's teaching dogs life skills. And that's where the opportunity is. If I can teach you dog parent a couple of skills, only a couple, it's going to change your dog, going to change your relationship with your dog. You're going to have a devoted dog. And by the way, it's going to change your relationships with everybody else in your life because you're going to develop skills that are going to help you how to bring the best out of others in your life.
That's
and I'm not there.
Incredible. Yeah.
I'm an unhealed healer.
Yeah.
You know, I'm work in progress. Do you understand?
Yes.
But I know the path and I'm committed to that path for myself and for dogs.
Yeah.
So that is the big difference.
I love that because then it, especially thinking of Pixie, who at times I feel that I'm reasoning with I have a third human living in my house.
100%.
Because she's that intelligent. And so I feel sometimes when I'm reasoning with her, I perceive her as that intelligent. So I respect her in that way. But there's sometimes where I'll say to myself, okay, I just need you to just turn off the border for a second. Like, I just need you to be my wheels are turning. You can't see it, guys, but they're turning.
Okay, because what you're saying to me, border, you know, she's a border collie. So what I want to bring into our conversation is the idea of epigenetic.
Okay.
She was bred. Yeah. It is in her DNA to have certain skills.
Yeah.
And when we take a dog with certain skills, we need to be able serve them
completely,
support those skills.
Yeah,
I get constantly people get pit bulls, and I love pit bulls,
they're the best. Yeah,
not everybody can be a parent or a parent for a pit bull,
yeah,
because of their epigenetic of being. And I'm not talking aggressive or anything, I'm talking about I have right now, I'm doing training vacations, I take a couple of dogs to my home. And the dog lives with me, and they sleep with me, and they eat with me, and they become my dog for a period of time.
Got it.
And so I have right now Aussie Doodle at my home.
Oh, cute.
And I'm going to post them on my Instagram. You can go to the Loved Dog Instagram and see. I'm going to post a picture today. I'll show you.
Okay.
The Aussie Doodle, and I have the Pitbull Puppy. They're both exact age. They're 4.5 months old.
Wow.
But the density of the pitbull, the way he plays, it's kind of like what do you call the bell?
Kettlebell.
Kettlebell playing,
with
a butterfly.
Yeah,
I mean, he is like the intensity of a kettlebell.
Yeah,
that pitbull puppy, and that is epigenetic. I can never change his energy, his density, his muscle structure
completely
to be the way, you know, a sweet Aussie Doodle plays. So
true.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you can't force, just to go to your car analogy, which is one of my favorite things I've ever heard, because I wrote it down. You cannot force a Ferrari to act like it's driving like a smart car.
No.
Yeah.
You can't.
And you cannot force a pity to act, if, let's say in this example, they're a Bentley, to act like a Camry or something that lower horsepower or strength. I guess they would maybe be more of a Dodge Charger. Like, they've got some muscle.
Or a Ram. Like on a range, like in Yellowstone or somewhere. But yes, that's exactly. You got it. So what it is, so whenever we work with the dog, we have to work within certain parameters.
Yeah.
And we need to understand what we're taking on.
It's true.
And the last thing do is to blame the dog for being, having a certain DNA, certain tendency. With border collies, that they need to think, that they need to run, that they have energy. So what it is, it's kind of like we got to understand the lineage. We got to understand the DNA. We got to, you see, and to understand that it's not only the physical part, it's also culturally.
Yeah.
Because culturally, you know, we have culture of countries, we have cultures of cities, we have cultures of within that, but then we have cultures of families. Your family culture, I bet, was probably different than the house next door that you grew up.
100%.
So when we look at culture and we see how much difference there is, then I think we stop blaming.
Yeah.
That somebody is not exactly like us, particularly when they're a different species.
Yeah.
Particularly, do you understand?
Yeah.
I want people to just look at dogs with awe and to realize how hard they're working to trying to fit into our culture while trying to meet their six core needs.
It's very, very true. And when you apply that loved method, because you receive that love unconditionally.
No, they don't. We do not receive unconditional love.
From the dog?
We do not. Absolutely. That's a huge myth that I would like to dispel.
Got it.
Dogs do not give unconditional love. Dog gives absolutely condition on how much you show up in their life.
Oh, okay. Got
it. When I work with celebrities
who
are very, very busy, and they have the assistant who is there taking care of the dog, who do you think the dog goes to?
The assistant.
So it is conditional.
Yeah.
And not, do you understand?
Yeah, no.
As it should be.
I guess I was thinking in the traditional sense. I think that has to be confusing for a dog. And I've seen Chelsea Handler documents it with her dogs in a hilarious method because her dog always goes to the housekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense. I guess that what I was trying to say in the pixie sense that I understand that it's conditional love that I get back, but...
Because you give a lot, so you get a lot back.
It's
and
true.
That's what people... See, JFK, in a famous statement, when he said, ask not what the country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I say it for those. Ask not what the dog can do for you or your children or your everything. Ask what you can do for your dog. If you come from that place, your dog, chances are, going to be so devoted to you and so connected to you that you're going to be able to help this particular dog be the most awesome version of themselves. Again, version of themselves. I cannot take a Pomeranian and turn them to a Border Collie.
No, you couldn't. And I also think that dogs have such unique personalities that just like my best version of myself is an evolution.
Yes.
That's the same thing with your dog.
So beautifully said.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Not only evolution, but do you have siblings?
I do.
And you came from the same family. Are you the same personality?
Heck no.
No. So do you understand? One of these is I want to bring my mission with the love dog method.
Yeah.
Is to bring common sense back.
Yeah.
Because we are still stuck in the 1950s when it comes to dog training. And what you see in our conversation, I think, I'm hoping that I'm blowing open your brain heart to question obedience, question dominance, question breathing. Because within the breed, if you and your siblings are so different, what are the chances within a breed, within a litter?
Yeah.
Do you understand? So what if we can look at the dog the way we look at people, and instead of seeing us as a race or as... Those French people, those Americans, those Israelis.
Yeah.
Those blonde women in California. I mean, what if we see each person in front of us as a story that needs to be told, as a gift that needs to be shared?
Yeah.
Whether they are with that race or that race, where they are, look at the world. And I believe that that's what dogs are in our life.
Yeah.
If we cannot do it with our loving dog, it's going to be way more difficult to do it with people because people are way more crazy-making.
they completely are. And as I sit here talking to you, I keep thinking about Pixie, and I apologize, guys, that you're going to have to listen about my dog. But I think that one thing I realized very early is that she had been obedient to the extent that she was submissive. And
that's it.
And
you got it.
And I knew that I didn't want that approach, but I didn't set forth maybe my own method other than, she's a border lab. She was very outdoorsy, but she was very not mentally stimulated. I could definitely tell because she was locked in a garage a lot of the time.
Wow.
And so
when her brain was developing, which is the worst part, when the brain is plastic, when the brain is still malleable.
Yeah.
You really want to put that is the most important time. That's the only point of getting a puppy, because puppies are pain in the neck, truly.
Yeah.
The only point of getting a puppy is to really be mindful on the messages and the belief system that we instill in our puppy's mind.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, it's easier for me to work with an older dog. I much prefer to work with older dogs. But when I get a puppy come to me, I look at them and I look at the brain, and I know that it's up to me to make the neural connections where I can impact how they're going to view the world as a whole. How they're going to view men? How they're going to view taking chances? How they're going to, whether they're going to be resilient or not when a dog is being not nice to them?
Yeah.
All of that. So when you're telling me that she was locked up, at not only what the breed that she is, two small breeds, but at the most important time of her life. Do you understand?
Yeah, I do. I felt it.
That breaks my heart.
I felt it because when we adopted her at four, and I think that there was an element of naive trust that I went into it with, that I was like, we're going to figure this out. Obviously, I'd never had a dog. But I think that I experimented with enough things and did enough to learn what mentally stimulated her. We bought a bunch of toys. We named them. She was able to say, I would say, go get Ellie the elephant, and she would go. She's not as quick now, or she's gotten a little lazy, but it made so much of a difference in terms of her happiness and I would say self-worth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you want.
Yeah.
That's exactly. And you see, and therefore, the relationship she's going to have with you is conditioned because you put the effort.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's unbelievable how little people want to put into dog and how much they want in return on investment, ROI. No business person in their right mind will put nothing into a business and expect to get great ROI.
Yeah.
Okay? And yet we're expecting it with our dogs. I'm going to take you to a 6 weeks class at a local pet store for $30 or whatever it is, and you're going to be Lassie. And if not, then you're dominant. Yep. Or you're stupid, or you're stubborn. That is like what I call the DSS disease, which is ridiculous.
It's
ridiculous.
Yeah. It's uneducated.
But I'm not blaming people. Why am I not blaming the dog owners? Why am I not blaming the dog parents?
Well, they've been established with a 50s approach of a one-size-fits-all, right?
You got it. Nobody ever stopped, other than me, you know, to come and say, guys, my heart goes out to you. You bought a bag of goods?
Which one?
You were sold like... My English is still...
Sold snake oil?
Well, something like that, yes. Where, you know, you do not know... Okay, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
For a minute, I lived in Austin, Texas. And in Austin, Texas, the summer was super hot, and I needed an extra air conditioner. And I called a very big store, and they came and installed an air conditioner.
Okay.
And it was so hot. It was like 110 degrees.
Yeah.
And the air conditioner I was so excited about stopped working. So I called the company and they sent a technician and they go, well, yeah. And I go, what do you mean, well, yeah? It's Austin, Texas. It's 110 degrees. I need air conditioner to work. And he says, but the air conditioner stopped working at 110 degrees. And I said, why didn't you tell me? He goes, why didn't you ask?
Oh,
and I said, because I didn't know to ask. I, as a consumer, did not know, oh, will there be a certain temperature, you know, that occurs in Austin, Texas, that will stop the air conditioner from working? And that is what's happening with dog training. People do not know to ask the right question. And the right question is, are you teaching my dog the life skills that they need to live with me for the next 17 to 20 years, hopefully?
Yeah.
And two, are you teaching my dog to love me and be devoted to me? If you ask these two questions, you're not going to hire, chances are, the dog trainer that you're hiring.
I really think that this is important to shift the way that you think. And it is so mind-blowing from that perspective, because it's almost like just such a small shift that opens so many, like, the way that you would perceive the world, I would say. So
isn't that true? The way you nailed it, the way you perceive the world.
Yeah.
And the tiny, tiny shift. I mean, if you think on a plane that is flying, if I want to fly from LAX to New York, and my flight plan will have a 2 millimeter shift from the course.
Yeah.
Over the 5 hours of the flight, Is it going to stay 2 millimeter or is the 2 millimeter going to grow?
Yeah.
I'm pointing with my finger now.
Yeah.
Where it's going to get farther and farther and further from the flight plane.
Completely.
And I would find myself, I don't know, in Chicago or in the Bahamas. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's very important that the shift that you're doing, the shift is not done for dominance nonsense and I'll be the alpha nonsense because that's going to turn the dog into an aggressive dog unbeknownst to you.
Yeah.
But instead to do the 2 millimeter shift for good.
Completely, because our audience is mostly millennial pet owners. So it's very likely their first pet of their own that's not their parents. Yeah. And I also think that millennial pet owners are so different than their parents because buying, let's say, the grocery store food is not the reality of that dog. So I think as millennials, we have to question our training needs an update to reflect.
100%.
Yeah.
And I believe in millennials and I believe that millennials are the generation to question the status quo.
Yeah.
And the status quo, particularly when it comes to those magnificent angels who trust us with their life.
Completely.
We need to update it. We need to update. And you brought up another really good point, which is, you know, store-bought food.
Yeah.
Here's the issue I have with that. So we talk that what we really have to do with the dogs is to help the brain move from the reptilian part of it, which is all about reactionary, to the limbic system with the amygdala, where it can be a little bit beginning of assessment. Is it a threat? Is it not a threat? And ultimately to the frontal lobe, because the frontal lobe is about connection. It's about secure attachment and connection. We want the brain to be good. What do we know makes you have brain fog and not be able to think? Eating sugar.
Bad food, yeah.
Bad food.
Yeah.
Sugar, carbs, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
What is in the dog food? Even in the fancy dog food that they do it for your dog and ship it to your home.
Yeah.
What is in there? Potatoes.
It's a lot of filler.
A lot of fillers that is carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Completely.
So what I'm looking at, when I'm working with the dog, I'm looking holistically.
Yeah.
Because I think, once again, I had a very famous chef, very big chef, bring his two golden doodle to my home. And he insisted on feeding the dogs the kibble because he had two big ones and it would be very expensive otherwise. Yeah. And I said, look, I don't work with dogs who eat kibble. It just, there's no point.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're not going to go to the functional doctor with your cigarettes and say, fix me, okay? It's not going to work, you know?
Completely.
I do not work with dogs who eat kibble.
Okay.
And if the people cannot afford more expensive food, then I will work with them, but we're going to find other ways to upgrade it.
Yeah.
We need to upgrade it for the dogs because we know the first brain is actually in the gut.
Yeah.
Anyhow, back to that famous chef.
Yeah.
It was very expensive to feed his dogs
of course.
Proper. And he said no. So I said, let's give it a shot. And I videotaped it. And we gave it 2 weeks. And the dogs were a nightmare. And we videotaped it. And I said to him, here is what it is. I'm doing everything. And now I'm going to do the exact same thing. But I'm going to put them on the dog food that I want them to eat.
Yeah.
And within a week, and he looked at me and he goes, okay, I guess I'm cooking for these dogs.
Yeah.
I said, that's it. So do you understand?
Yeah.
You brought up the point, and I think millennials are just the best generation.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that our outlook, and I'm an elder millennial, so I apologize for all you younger millennials, but I just think that our approach is so different that we almost rebel and question how our parents did it to the extent that we determine what our new reality is going to be. And I think that you have to ask those questions to ensure that with that special bond that you have with your dog, that you're looking after the holistic. Like for me, supplements with Pixie has made so much of a difference because I think that we've got an edge of probably starting of doggy dementia.
Wow.
And supplements have helped so much with her to alleviate some of that.
What supplements are you giving her?
So I'm giving her Herbsmith. They have a senior dog mental viscosity, and it makes so much of
love
a difference.
That.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. She's my little nugget. So I know we have a couple minutes left, so, and I want to be respectful of your time because, guys, she has celebrity clients.
Oh, my God. That's not it. That's not it. That's not.
I know. I kid. So tell me the story of the dog that stole socks and how that kind of parlayed you into.
Well, you've done your research, haven't you?
I tried.
Amazing.
I tried. Well, you got to pay respect. It's.
I mean, seriously, thank you. You're doing really a great job. So my background is that I was an intelligence officer with the Elite Special Forces, and my focus was on the unimportant details. I have a DNA deformity that makes me notice the little things.
Got
makes
it.
Difficult living as me.
Yeah.
But it also allowed me to have a gift. But I didn't know it then. The military tested, and they said, oh, you'll be an intelligence officer, and they said, you're going to pay attention to the unimportant details. It wasn't said like that, but it became very clear. When I finished my service, I needed a break from people, and I thought I would be a therapist because, obviously, I knew that I was good with understanding behavior.
You're very good at connecting. I understand that, yeah.
So I went down to the Israeli desert, and I helped with behavior research of birds and of wolves. And when we're living in a social structure. And when I was there, I had a dream one night, literally a dream. And the dream said, you need to work with dogs. And it was a voice that I heard. It was in the middle of the night, but it was blue sky and white clouds. And it woke me up in the middle of the night. And I was like, whoa. Because remember, I have my plan. I'm going to be a therapist, and I'm going to specialize in certain and second generation of Holocaust survivor. I really wanted to understand my mother.
Okay.
Anyhow. So that dream happens, and I'm like, what does it mean? I mean, what do I do with that? Because it was that profound.
Wow.
And it's decades later, and that's the one thing in my life that I don't doubt, is that dream. And I believe we all come into this life with a promise. We all come to this life with a gift. And if we just have the courage to follow it. I didn't know what it meant, but what happened was I got a free ticket to go to Southeast Asia for a couple of weeks instead of, I'm making it very short.
Yeah.
Instead of, and the reason I got the ticket is because I went to a lecture, there was a dog there, and I went and I made up with the dog, and the guy was giving the lecture. Nobody can come next to my dog, and I'm like, well, here's what he's, you know.
Yeah.
And he became friend, and he gave me his gratitude, he gave me a ticket, and I ended up staying a year, and I came to this country just to visit to see if I can be a seeing eye dog trainer because of the damn dream.
Oh,
and
wow.
They told me that I have to study for 2 years and there's no way I would leave my country, Israel, for 2 years. So I said no. So I had a little bit of time. I went to volunteer with a dog trainer in the valley. And he got a call from somebody in the city that had a Cocker Spaniel that was stealing socks. And they were like exasperated. They tried every trainer. And he looks at me and he goes, you go. And I'm like, but I'm not a dog trainer. And he goes, oh, just go. He couldn't care less.
Yeah.
So when I went there, it became very obvious that that the dog was doing very much like what that 8-year-old bulldog was doing. We needed attention. And the only time he got attention is when he was stealing socks. And when I told it to his dog daddy, the dog daddy goes, but I'm home all day. And I said, you're physically home, but your back is turned to him.
Yeah.
You are busy writing music. You are not actually present. And how many relationships you can sit with somebody, but you don't know them.
Yeah, completely.
So anyhow, so the dog tried in his own doggy way. And when we changed it, we turned the games around and everything.
Yeah.
The behavior changed. And it was Kenny G, him and his then lovely wife, Lindy, which I love to this day.
Yeah.
Recommended me to a bunch of people, and I all of a sudden started getting calls from Goldie Hawn and Whoopi Goldberg and Nicolette Sheridan, years later, when I was working with her, third dog at the time, you know, I worked with two other dogs for her, was on the set of Desperate Housewife, and she brought the puppy with her, Oliver, her golden retriever, and Oprah saw it, and she was like, what's going on? That's amazing, and that's how Oprah and I hooked up. But at the time, I was already the resident dog expert for the Today Show and already...
No small feat, guys.
No. So, you know, and Simon & Schuster already gave me the book deal. I mean, I didn't want to write a book, but they said, you got to tell your story. So now I'm writing my third book because it's very different for my first two books.
Okay.
It's now we're going... Back then, it was about positive and beginning of mindfulness. Now it's truly heavy-duty... mindfulness.
Yeah.
I mean, dog training is a spiritual practice.
I could definitely see that. It's something that I need to learn more about. I would say I don't know as much as I would like. I think that Pixie, I should do more training with.
How old is she?
She's going to be 13 in like a couple weeks. Uh-huh. So she's going to be 13, her golden birthday on August 13th.
Amazing.
Yeah. So she's going strong. So she's still got that puppy energy. People Amazing. Have no clue how old she is other than her George Clooney yes. salt and pepper
yes.
that she's got. So I'm absolutely so appreciative of your time and coming to talk to us. This was such a fun conversation. I'm going to update you. I'm going to try some of the stuff with Pixie being slightly reactive with some of the dogs in the neighborhood. So I'm going to embody and try some of these, and I'll update everybody on it.
It is my pleasure to be here. Obviously, I believe that you need hands-on experience.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, talking about it, it's good, but I think it's kind of like me showing you food versus letting you taste the food.
Of course.
Completely different.
Yeah.
But what I'm hoping to... for your listener is to make them doubt the status quo and start asking better questions, better quality questions.
Yeah. And I also think viewing your dog as that spiritual, intelligent, smart being yep. that you shouldn't try to dominate, you should work with, partner exactly. with, and see it as you're in service of each other.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You got it. Thank Perfect. You for having me.
Thank you again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful to Tamar for joining the Woof Life show. I so enjoyed this conversation, and I think that her approach is something that I have seen in action personally with Pixie. I just adore her, and I am so grateful and thankful. Thank you so much for listening to the Woof Life Show. Please subscribe, share with your pooch-loving friends, and rate us and tell us how we're doing. Please give your pooch a very big hug and a kiss for us. We would so appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening.